Hello everyone and welcome to MedHeroSnir Podcast Season 3, Episode 6. I'm your host Vic Aslanian, and as always I'm joined by my co-host Mr. Mike Balian sitting to my right, where we discuss our great Armenian history covering different eras, topics, and people. Today's episode is about the life of King Gagik the First Artruni and the Kingdom of Vaspurka. Now, if you listen to our last episode,
to be continued.
Yeah, we all know that Gagik Artruni played a significant role in Sambat, Bagratuni's fall as the king of Armenia. Yes. He wasn't our favorite character because, you know, a lot of backstabbing back and forth. But this will kind of shed light into why he did those things and kind of about his life, because his so-called kingdom did surpass the Bagratunis.
Somewhat.
Yep. Right? So some interesting things we're going to read and discuss today on this episode.
Yeah.
Besides that, how are you?
The fallout.
I'm good.
Yeah.
Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. We're recording on a Friday.
Yeah.
Okay. We had to skip Thursday.
It's all right.
Busy lives.
It's getting, get the, you know, it's like band practice.
Yep. But before we start our episode.
Announcements.
Now, first thing I want to say again, we mentioned last episode about the contest we're doing for the podcast cover. Some people have emailed. We want more. We want everybody to involved. So out of all the listeners and subscribers and watchers we have, I'm sure there's quite a few who are designers. So
I'm still challenging you people.
Yeah. So get involved. If not, I'm going to have Mike do it. So it's very easy, guys. We want you involved. And like I said, this is going to be a community effort. We're going to post these, take votes on it, and the winner will get a free sculpture, a t-shirt, and a mug. And plus, we'll promote you as a designer so you get more work from the community. So again, either reach out to us through Instagram, which is at MedHeroSnir, or send us an email, which is pod@medherosnir.com. Second announcement is that we are proud to announce that the Armenian Komitas National Quartet will be performing live in Los Angeles on the evening of December 9th. We would like all of you to join us for this wonderful event. You and I will be there as well.
Yes.
Where they will be performing and paying homage to music of Komitas, Mirzoyan, Mozart, and Rachmaninoff. There you go. Mm-hmm. At the Glendale Presbyterian Church at 7 p.m., which is located at 125 South Louise Street in Glendale, California. So again, if you are local in the LA area, Orange County, we want you to join us. This is going to be great.
It's going to be, they're famous, guys.
Yeah,
this quartet. This quartet is world famous. They travel quite a bit.
Yeah, and they're going to be here. So for tickets, you want to call 818-265-0506. Again, that's 818-265-0506. It will sell out fast, so
it's a small place.
Yeah,
I think it holds something around like either 800 to 1,000 people.
Yeah, yeah. So
and they pack it.
Yeah, So don't miss out. And that's pretty much it as far as announcements go. All right. So again, we're gonna dive into the life of Gagik the First Artruni and the Kingdom of Vaspurakan. We're gonna cover his life and everything that took place.
Yep.
Okay. You ready?
Ready.
All right. So, from the research we did and everything that we found, Gagik Artsruni is one of the important figures who have left a significant mark within Armenian history. He was the second son of Prince Gregory Derenik Artsruni of Vaspurakan and Sofia Bagratuni, the daughter of King Ashot the First Bagratuni.
I hope you guys are all taking notes.
Yeah. Again, we covered the life of King Ashot Bagratuni, who was the man who basically, you know, created, or not created, but, you know, gave rebirth to the Kingdom of Armenia. Now, along with the Byzantine and Arabic sources, important Armenian primary sources about the life of Gagik Gartuni are found in the 9th and 10th century works of Hovhannes Drashkanakertsi.
That guy.
Yeah. And Thomas Artsrouni. Thomas Artsrouni's original narrative ends with an incomplete 29th chapter around 904 when when Gagik Artsrouni was still not crowned as the king of Vaspurakan. Several unknown authors, referred to as anonymous continuators, took it upon themselves to continue Thomas's history, focusing on important events that took place after King Gagik's coronation in 908, as well as the succeeding history of Vaspurakan down to 1370s, with also adding an appendix and a colophon. Several other anonymous continuators continued adding passages to the history of the House of Artsunig up to the first half of the 14th century.
Yeah, it's not clear. We looked into Thomas Artsrouni and his works. It's not clear what or when he passed away.
Actually, it's not even clear when he was really born.
There wasn't too much information on him. But his writings obviously are there to prove of his existence.
Yeah.
His death was sometime during the turn of the 9th to 10th century, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
People picked up his writings and continued his documentation.
Now he started writing history in general in the 870s. Mm-hmm. That's when he started.
Yep.
I think the book that he wrote is called History of the House of Artsunik. So, I don't know if that book's available. If it's possible to get, I'm sure it's interesting.
I did come across some information that said, I think sometime in the 15th or 16th century, some of his books were translated or whatnot. I'd have to kind of look into that since it kind of makes sense with the time frame. But
you didn't do your homework.
I tried. Anyhow, Gagik was born in 879 in his native Vaspurakan. In 904, Gagik Artsrouni succeeded his elder brother, Ashot Sarkis, as the prince of Vaspurakan. During this time, his brother, Gurgen Artsrouni, ruled the southern portions of Vaspurakan, while Gagik ruled the northern Vaspurakan.
Yeah.
Gurgen ruled the counties of Anzani, Zor, Kharchunik, Guronovit, Bun Martastan, Archishakovit. I'm sorry if I'm butchering some of this stuff. Vic tends to leave me with a lot of this complicated stuff.
I do it on purpose.
I know you do. Arnovoten, Greater and Lesser Agbak, Ake, Tadrian, Erna, and Zarehavan. See, I'm telling you, he leaves me with this stuff. While Gagik ruled the counties of Chuash, Tornavan, Artaz, Martastan, Garni, Arberani, Agandrot, Barilovit, Palunik, Matsnunik, Tos Prishtunik, Bogunik, and Gugan Artashesian.
All right. I don't know. They're ancient
you
names.
You literally had me name off every single county, city, municipality that existed during this time period.
We have to paint the picture so our audience
can have an idea of how
big this area was.
Some of those Arabic names you get stuck with.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. After 904, Gagik Artsrouni also extended his control over the province of Mok and the Çahuk County of Korçak province, along with the Zarevand and Her counties of the Norshirakan province of Greater Armenia, which also became part of the Artsrouni domain. That is to say, the kingdom of Vaspurakan during the reign of Gagik Artsrouni stretched from north to south, from the Araks River to the Korduk Mountains, and from east to west, from Lake Van to Lake Kaputan.
Yeah, so, you know, you named all these counties and cities, and at the end, you know, if you can picture
The vastness of the territory.
That's a large area.
Yeah, I mean you have to understand some of these boundaries too: rivers, lakes, mountains, right? So they obviously had these things mapped out for the family.
Yeah, yeah. Now Gagik Artsrouni married Melke. Mm-hmm. That's how it's pronounced, and it's spelled M L K apostrophe E.
Yes,
Melke.
Mm-hmm.
First, we thought it was Mike.
Yes.
We're like, married Mike?
Yeah, I'm like, who's Mike?
Yeah. Who in the primary sources is also referred to as Tamat, the daughter of the youngest son of King Ashot the First Bagratuni, Sparapet Shapu.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it is interesting to note that although the Bagratuni and Artsuni houses were in a sense rivals,
of course,
Gagik Artsuni on his mother's side was the grandson of Ashot Bagratuni and in line with his heritage also married a descendant of Ashot Bagratuni. So in essence, they're still Bagratunis.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But
yeah. Now, King Gagik and Queen Tamar had two sons, Derenik and Hamazasp. After the passing of Gagik Artsruni, Derenik succeeded his father as the king of Vaspurakan. Both Queen Tamar and King Gagik were passionate patrons of the church, as well as arts and sciences. Gagik Artsruni is mostly remembered for ordering the erection of the marvelous Armenian Cathedral of the Holy Cross, which was built on Lake Van's island of Akhtamar, mm-hmm. and is one of the surviving Armenian architectural landmarks till today.
That's, if you do, if my math is right, that's 1,100 years almost.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Queen Tamar, as the first queen of Kingdom of Vaspurakan, is also renowned for a beautifully illuminated and rare 19th century Armenian manuscript, which is named after Queen Melge, or Tamar, and according to some scholars, was brought to the Vaspurakan as part of the queen's dowry. Interesting, huh?
Yeah.
The precious manuscript is presently kept in the library of the congregation of the Mkhitaryst Fathers on the island of San Lazaro in Venice.
Yes.
Hmm. Trip to Venice?
Sure.
All right.
Tomorrow.
We Yesterday. Will. And now we'll do a separate episode on the life of Queen Tamar, and in her life in a future episode.
She's an important figure.
Yeah. But yeah, and it's funny you mentioned that, like Akhtamar Island. If you look at Western Armenia, current day Turkey, on Lake Van, it is actually the second largest island on that lake.
Mm-hmm.
It's about almost 1 kilometer. Kilometer in size and is situated approximately roughly about 3 kilometers from the shoreline. The origin, it's a funny story about the origin. I'm still reading on Queen Tamar, uh-huh. and it does talk about Akhtamar, the island. And it's.
Wasn't there a legend attached to
that's
it?
That's the thing. Yeah. The legend. Well, let's talk about the legend first. The legend is that. Basically, a princess named Tamar lived on the island, mm-hmm. and there was a boy who was a commoner who was in love with her. And according to the legend, this boy would swim from the shore to the island each night, guided by a light,
yes,
lit from her, basically. Mm-hmm. And her father, the king, learned about this and.
How dare you?
Yeah, and he basically smashed a light one night when he was swimming to the shore, and
Angry because Papa.
it was really dark, the boy can't see it, so he drowns basically, mm-hmm. It's basically he was drowning or something, he went Ach Tamar, in Ach, which is oh Tamar, in English, yeah. So. And the legend was actually inspiration of a well-known poem that was written by Hovhannes Tumanyan in 1891.
Mm-hmm.
But if when we talk about Queen Tamar's life in a future episode, and I was reading it, it's actually Akhtamar is completely spelled differently. It's not Akhtamar, mm-hmm. as in like Akhtamar, So. But we'll get into that in another episode. So just
have you, if any of you haven't seen any images of this,
yeah,
go check it out.
Go check
it's
it out.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's an amazing, still to this day, amazing scenery.
Yeah.
Absolutely
and
amazing
and
scenery.
I think, and we'll get to it, but there's a reason that this church was saved.
Yes.
Actually.
Yeah. We're going to get to that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. During the early Middle Ages, the House of Artsuni only controlled the counties of Arbat, Arbak and Mardastan of the province of Vaspurakan of Greater Armenia. By the second half of the 8th century, the House of Arsuni strengthened its position and took over the lands of Rushduni, Anzevati, Akeati, Genuni, and other Naharars, thus bringing all of the land of Vaspurakan under the control, with their latter lords acting as their vassals. There you go again, sticking me with all these names.
Overall, you're good at it, man. Stop. You're good at
it. I'm getting better. I need to practice, definitely.
Well, I'll butcher it, so I give them to you.
No, it's fine. I'm good. Overall, Gagik Arsuni, for his contemporary as well as later historians, remained a controversial figure because it was though his actions that united the kingdom of Armenia was split in two. As a rival, Arsuni kingdom was established in Vaspurakan in 908 that came to challenge the central Armenian kingdom of the Bagradunis. The kingdom of Vaspurakan lasted until 1021. Then it was annexed by the Byzantine Empire during the new drive towards incorporating Armenia into its fold.
Yeah.
The central Bagraduni kingdom would only last for a few more decades after this fact, being annexed by Byzantium in 1045. Although smaller Armenian kingdoms throughout Greater Armenia, which we know has always been the case, such as the Kingdom of Syunik, would never be annexed by the Byzantine Empire, maintaining their independence until as late as 1170. Unfortunately, the rise of the Kingdom of Vaspurakan during this period was not a unique phenomena and was also reflective of the feudally fractured nature of Armenia, as we all know.
Yeah.
A number of local lords in provinces like Artsakhutik, Syunik, Gars, Lori, and elsewhere also proclaimed themselves as kings, thus further rupturing the unity of the country. However, except for a relatively brief period, during the reign of King Gagik Arsuni, the supreme kingship belonged to the Bagraduni kings, who were also viewed as suzerains of other Armenian kingdoms and principalities.
Yeah.
So all of that, and the Bagradunis were still superior.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, again, going to reference back to last episode.
We're going to cover some of the things that we'll touch on what went on in the last episode.
Yeah, it was unfortunate that, you know, this took place. But and I think this is going to put more perspective of what we talked about last episode.
Yeah.
So now, in early 10th century, Gagik made an alliance with Emir of Atropatene, Yusuf, as you call him. Mm-hmm. Ibn Abil Saj, and with the latter's help overthrew the Armenian king Sambat the First, and essentially usurped the title of the king of Armenia.
Mm-hmm.
This was a serious blow not only to Armenian unity, but to the kingdom of Armenia as a whole, as the Bagratuni dynasty had significantly weakened and fractured as a result of the arrest and execution of King Sambat the First. And we talked in detail last episode how he was executed.
Yeah, beheaded in front of all those people.
And then crucified.
Yep.
After being beheaded.
Made an example of.
Now, it must be mentioned that Gagik Arsuni was crowned in 908 as the local king of Vaspurakan, and after the murder of the king Sambat the First in 914, claimed himself as the king of Armenia. Both Abbasid Caliph al-Makwatadir and the Emir of Atropatene Yusuf were also too eager to support Gagik Arsuni, and therefore naturally fracture Armenia into two hostile sections headed by the two rival houses. Yeah. Now, Gagik proclaimed king of Armenia by the caliph. As king of Armenia by caliph and Emir of Atropatene in order to use him against Sambat the First and you know, Ashot Yerkat, who basically ruled, I should say, 1914-1929.
Not 19-9.
Nine. Not 19. You're right. Yeah. Nine. Oh, why am I saying 19?
Jumped 1,000 years, yeah, man. You're fast forwarding here.
Yeah. So, however, Gagik Arsuni, although did try to extend his rule over the parts of Armenia and rule as the king of all Armenia, as himself proclaimed in the title of Amenain Hayot Takavor, suggested, was not successful in this endeavor and would only rule with such a title in name only, as his rule was never extended beyond Vaspurakan and few of the adjoining provinces and counties. After Gagik's death, his son Gregory Derenik was named King of Osporokan only with the title King of Armenia, once again so restored strange. To the House of Bagratuni.
Mm-hmm.
However, Gagik Artsuni was able to unite a number of the Nahara houses of Osporokan under his banner, who became his vassals, basically. These included the houses of Ake, Amatuni, Anzevatsi, Apahuni,
mm-hmm.
Kajberuni,
mm-hmm.
Varzhanuni,
mm-hmm.
Vahevuni. Hey, I should go claim land.
You should.
Yeah. Ganuni.
Along with the 9 million other Vahes in this world.
Gabegahian. That's right. Gabegahian. Yeah, I guess. Havnuni and Terpatuni or Truni.
And there you go. So see, you stuck yourself with some of these.
How does that feel, man?
Oh, I felt bad. So
yeah, I bet you did.
But yeah. So again, you know, he kept trying to proclaim to be.
It seemed like they all did.
Yeah, that to be the king of Armenia. You know, and it's but he couldn't. He just couldn't. No,
yeah, it's strange. We had one guy passing out crowns. And then these guys are, it's just this nonstop power struggle for this title.
Well, I think also, you know, the people themselves, you know, they knew what he did.
Yeah,
and I think they could never, he could not just rally the rest of, let's say, Osporokan and some of these small provinces and stuff, right? But the rest of the Kingdom of Armenia, you know, end of the day, the truth was out there of what he did.
Sure.
So, I'm like, sure, how do you rally behind someone like that?
Anybody, you know, when you self-proclaim like this, then you're trying to get ahead of the news.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, nope.
I planted my flag.
Yeah.
That is it.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't work that way.
No, sure does not.
No, it does not. No. In 907, Gagik took over the fortress of Amyuk on the northeast coast of Lake Van from the Uthmanids, a local Muslim clan that had established themselves in the area in the mid-9th century.
Now, Uthmanids, I did try to find something about them. Nothing. They were just a local tribe.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was nothing about them.
They remind me of, okay, well,
even the Arabs themselves who fought against them, they were like this weird nomad clan that just had that, they call them that.
I mean, right now the Kurds are a little bit more of an example, but they're a little bit more widespread and they've existed forever.
Yeah.
Right? That's when I was reading this part, I'm like, they kind of remind me of the Kurds, but they're not as big, not as vast, not as stuck.
Yeah.
Because the Kurds have existed forever.
Well, yeah, of course.
Right. According to the contemporary historian and Catholicus Hovhannes Drashkhanakertsi, that guy, Gagik Artsuni was angered by the fact that during a quarrel with the House of Suni over the possession of the region of Nakhichevan, King Sambat I Bakraduni took the side of the Sunnis and thus alienated Gagik Artsuni. Gagik was especially upset because earlier in 902, King Sambat had gifted the city of Nakhichevan along with its environs to his maternal cousin, Ashot Artsuni, only in order to appease Sambat Suni, changing his decision and granting Nakhichevan to the latter a few years later.
Yeah.
Deals being brokered left and right.
Mm-hmm.
Nakhichevan, being situated on the Silk Road, was an important trade hub and thus had important value as an economic and strategic center. In the 7th century, it was mentioned as being part of Vasporakan. However, after the murder of prominent Arsuni lords, along with other Naharars in 705, Nakhichevan several times switched hands. Additionally, King Sambat Bakraduni had gifted the town as a personal and not hereditary fief, or fief, I still have trouble pronouncing that word, to Ashot Artsruni. It's interesting, Nakhichevan, just for whatever reason, even to this day, just gets passed around.
Well,
it's like this territory, it's like, no, it's yours, no, it's yours, no, it's yours.
Well, not just
well,
that.
How about that? We'll gift it to you.
It's a very, very important,
of course it is.
You know, position of that land that you need. So,
however, that was not a view shared by Gagik Artsuni, who felt that the land traditionally belonged to Vasporakan and the gift made by Sambat Bakraduni was hereditary in nature. And as a subsequent leading representative of the House of Artsuni, he was entitled to the land.
Yeah. Now, so this kind of gives a clear view of why he, where it began, where the hatred, I guess you can say, towards
the resentment.
Yeah, resentment, hatred, whatever you want to call it, towards Sambat.
Because he wasn't in line.
Yeah. So
he wasn't in line.
This, according to Hovhannes Drashkanakertsi, drove the embittered Gagik to seek the help and alliance of Yusuf, the emir of Atropatene, who, as we noted, was more than eager to splinter Armenia into two or more warring factions.
This dude didn't like us.
Yeah. Now, in 908, Yusuf recognized Gagik Artsumi as the king of Vaspurakan. We covered this last episode. The anonymous continuer of Thomas Artsuni, who wrote sometime shortly after King Gagik's passing in 943, and continued in the same work where Thomas left off, added the biography of King Gagik Artsumi after his coronation, noted that handing over of Nakhichevan by Sambat to the Sunnis was one of the main reasons why Gagik, you know, sided with Yusuf against the Bagratuni house. Yep. There you go.
Yep. Well, but we're going to find out that Yusuf is just up to no good left and right.
Of course, he had his own agenda. So, Gagik Artsumi, having ruled in a turbulent time, surprisingly had a long rule of nearly 40 years, including as Prince of Vaspurakan from 904 to 908, and as king for the next 35 years, from 908 until his passing in 943. I mean, that is a long time.
40 years to rule? Come on. I mean, that's as long as Digran Medz.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, 40 years is a long time to rule.
This long reign was also due to the prudent and wise policies of Artsumi King, who was a good military leader, astute diplomat, and excellent statesman. In 909, Gagik with Yusuf attacked Sambat Sunni, and the following year unsuccessfully tried to conquer the city of Bagarashakert in the Ararat province. According to anonymous continuator, it was only after the capture of King Sambat the First in 913 that Gagik Artsumi presented himself as the king of all Armenia. Yeah. Now, perhaps wanting to fill the void left by the thronement of the Bagratuni king and wanted to see his own Artsumi dynasty replacing the Bagratunis as the main ruling dynasty of Armenia.
That's where the ego kicked in.
This affirmed by the inscription left on the Cathedral of the Holy Cross erected between 915 to 921 by the order of Gagik Artsumi, where he's mentioned as the king of Armenia. The erection of the Cathedral of the Holy Cross, along with a number of other beautiful palaces, ports with advanced hydrotechnical engineering, and similar edifices throughout Vaspurakan mentioned by contemporary historians, also attest to the fact that Gagik wanted to portray himself, especially to his main rivals, the Bagratunis, as the great king of all Armenia, projecting power and prestige through such impressive and monumental edifices.
Yeah, well, you know, so he inscribes on the church or the cathedral.
The cross.
Yeah. Who he is, stakes his claim.
Yeah.
And it lasted till now. You know, that was an important move for him because it kind of stamped his legacy, right?
Well, you know, if you think about it, if you go back to the last episode, you know, because of the earthquake in Devin was in ruins, you know, Sambat was constantly fighting back and forth with Yusuf. He didn't have time to help with the advancement rebuilding issues, of these cities, problems, and things like that. Now, Gagik, obviously being on in a territory where he doesn't have these issues, you know, he started building these great palaces and things like that to show that look what type of a king I am.
Well, I mean,
you know, why he thought he should be the king of all Armenia was because he's doing a much better job for the people.
I'm not by any means trying to paint a negative picture of this. Yeah. You know, like anybody who has that much power and is trying to stake his claim to that kind of power and to the masses, in this case, the Armenians, far and wide.
Yeah.
He had to build big things. We've seen this throughout history with not just Armenians, with anybody.
Yeah.
You build big things, it shows your power. Mm-hmm. This is the way it works. And we're going to get into some of this stuff right now with some of the amazing things that they did.
Oh, yeah.
Or in and around.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean in and around Lake Vaughn.
Oh, yeah.
Not around, in and around.
So let's continue.
Yes. As such, the Palatine Cathedral of the Holy Cross, built in the fashion of the 6th and 7th century Armenian churches, such as Avon and St. Aripsime, is one of the most splendorous surviving Armenian edifices of the Middle Ages. The stones for the Cathedral of the Holy Cross were brought across Lake Vaughn by boat from the destroyed fortress that lay on the border of Vasbarakan Kingdom with Syria. The architect Manvel, whom the anonymous continuator of Tovmas Artsruni history calls a man full of wisdom and a great expert in his craft, managed to erect a temple that strikes with the perfection of its proportions.
Yeah.
The continuator noted that he found it difficult to express in words his astonishment at the wondrous beauty of the edifices, adding, and I quote, "Even if an intelligent man were to examine only one section of the palace for several hours on end, on coming out, he would be unable to tell anyone of what he had seen." Let's find out why.
Yeah.
The interior of the cathedral, which was built of pink sandstone internally, measures 49 by 38 feet, with the dome reaching 67 feet above the ground, supported by a high circular drum resting on four penditives rather than columns. Yeah. A penditive...
Can you describe it?
...is...
Like an arch.
So it's right. It's almost like you have a cube, mm-hmm. right? Like, imagine a cube in my hands, guys, yeah. And you shave off the four corners and round them off, and then you put the dome on top.
Yeah.
So it's not like you see some of the old Romanesque or Hellenistic stuff.
Yeah.
Where it's a column, mm-hmm. goes all the way up and down. You have, like, let's say 8, 10, 12 yeah. columns, and then the yeah. dome rests on yeah. top of it, right? Yeah. Even on the interior.
Yeah.
Let's say the exterior gets built up, but even on the interior, you have the columns supporting.
Yeah.
In most cases, not in every case, but... It's a very interesting style. Actually, a really good example of this, if you want to look it up, is besides looking up the word, is the Hagia Sophia.
There you go. Hey, good point.
Yeah. The Hagia Sophia. It has a bunch of these.
Yeah.
These penditives. It's
Wasn't the Hagia Sophia designed?
It was architect, was Armenian.
Yeah.
With my last name.
Yeah. Balian.
Yes. The magnificent external reliefs on the walls of the temple and the colorful internal frescoes depict various biblical scenes of creation, as well as different episodes throughout the history of the House of Artsruni, the history of Armenia in general, along with intricately carved geometric decorative motifs, the flora and fauna of Armenia, and scenes depicting the life of ordinary Armenian people.
Wow.
Very descriptive.
Yeah.
King Gagik Artsuni, as the donor of the Palatine Cathedral, wearing a crown and royal robes, is centrally depicted on the external reliefs of the cathedral in different poses, including in full standing pose, holding a 3D model of the cathedral.
Wow.
They had 3D modelers back then.
Well, no, carvers, you know.
Yes.
Sculptors.
Which the king extends to a carved relief of Christ, as well as seated upon the royal throne. The fact that King Gagik was presented holding the model of the church fulfilled a multifold purpose. The relief was meant to show his authority by depicting the king's pious gift to the church, his devotion to Christ, and also showing the viewer the model of the building, since one would not be able to see the whole edifice from the main entrance.
I want to say he was a good marketer.
Showman.
I mean... Think about it.
Look what I built.
Yeah.
And holding it.
It was to win everybody over.
Yes.
Good marketing strategy, yeah. You know. The Palatine Cathedral of the Holy Cross functioned as the seat of the Catholic Ossate of Ahtamar that existed from almost 8 centuries.
Mm-hmm.
From 1113 to 1895, and was only dissolved by the Ottoman Sultan Abdul Hamid II. After the Hamidian massacres of 1894 through 1896, We all know about those. Interestingly enough, until the 1530s, the Thalikoset of Akhtamar was led by a member of the Artuni family. I mean, the lineage went on.
Of course it would.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the large, beautiful palace, which had a square floor plan and included a great dome hall of surrounded with exedrae. Is that how you pronounce it? Exedrae?
Exedrae?
Mm-hmm. I think what that means is like a special room where people gather and converse or something. Like it's like a man cave type of a thing.
If you guys want to look it up, it's spelled E-X-E-D-R-A-E.
Yeah.
Again, E-X-E-D-R-A-E.
Yeah. So Exedrae, I guess. Let's call it
Exedrae.
Exedrae, whatever you want to call it. Okay. And the other palace chambers decorated with murals along with adjoining shops, storehouses, and treasury with paved streets, palatial gardens, and orchards with high-rise trees and areas of recreation and relaxation.
Sounds beautiful.
I mean, are you imagining this?
Yeah, I'm picturing it.
Over the succeeding centuries were either submerged underwater due to the rise of the lake's water level or were destroyed by various invaders.
Of course they were.
I mean, just reading that, man, imagining like, it's like almost in going back to movies, you know, like this is just the scenery, just woof.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Sounds like a nice place.
However, the cathedral miraculously survived and reached our own times. During the Armenian Genocide, the cathedral monks were killed and its treasures were looted. The cathedral remained in neglect throughout the decades after 1915. Now, interesting, when the Kurdish writer and journalist Yashar Kamel visited the island of Akhtamar in 1951, he found out that the Turkish government was planning to demolish the cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
After Yashar's outcry, the planned destruction was halted and the cathedral was saved. So thank you to...
Out of all people.
Yeah. Mm. Our Kurdish brother.
Yes.
Yashar Kamel.
Thank
you.
Don't touch the church.
Yeah.
Don't touch the church. The fact that Gagik Arzuni shortly thereafter erected a grand palace along with a new port... This is where it gets interesting, the port. And a new spiritual center on the island of Akhtamar also suggests that the Artsuni sovereign, will, after the martyrdom of Sambat I Bakraduni in 914, might have wanted to see himself and his dynasty not only as the rulers of Aspurakam, but also the kingdom of Armenia.
Yeah.
And we know that's the goal. The anonymous continuator of Thomas Artsuni noted that the port was a wonder in its own right built upon Lake Van. He wrote, "On the island of Akhtamar, Gagik Arzuni ordered countless workmen and craftsmen to place huge slabs of rock on the bottom of lake's water. Soon, a rock foundation rose above the water, and upon it, the king ordered the erection of the port walls, enforced with ramparts and high towers. The king also built wooden piers where he, his sons, and warriors feasted. The walls were extended all the way to high cliffs, thus creating a strong barrier. The king placed huge gates as a point of entry to the port, thus creating, for many ships, a peaceful and safe harbor." Are you picturing this?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they were dropping slabs of stone in the water
and
to get it to raise above the water and then built on top of
that. I mean, I wonder what the depth was. And how
I looked into this.
Okay.
I got curious. So not where Akhtamar is, but you know if you can picture Lake Van, the bigger area of it on the southern part, is, I think it said 400 plus meters deep. But as you go more to the north, the more thin side where Akhtamar is, it's a lot more shallow. But still, you're dropping giant slabs of stone. What I'm curious is, how did they get those? If they're extending it out, I'd love to know how they extend, like how they, did they have like a crane system on boats or something?
Or on logs they rolled?
Whatever. Wow. Like I was getting weird pictures in my head of like how they managed to do this.
That
because you're talking about a little over a thousand years ago.
Yeah.
Right? You're dropping slabs to the bottom. And then
on top of each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you can't guarantee, here's another thing. You can't guarantee that those slabs will stay because of the weight that
the sand. I mean, or soil, to align it's it, sponge.
Not just that, to align it to make sure they keep falling on one another.
Yeah,
that itself.
That
is
in and of itself, and also the fact that it has to at some point sink because of the weight. Now I'm getting technical with it, because any lake that has a bed, the soil is, it's never strong.
Of course,
it's gonna sit. It's gonna sink, even with all that weight. How did they figure this all out?
I don't know.
You know what I mean? I don't know. Super interesting.
Well, I guess Monville was involved in that.
Yeah.
So
the continuator of Thomas Arsuni added that the palace was an architectural wonder built by a wise and ingenious architect. With a square floor plan, the inner walls, like the Cathedral of the Holy Cross, covered with beautiful frescoes and built in such a creative way that it did not require supporting pillars and columns.
Yeah.
Like we were mentioning earlier.
Yep.
Within 5 years, the port of Akhtamar became a bustling place. King Gagik also constructed an underground stone conduit to bring water from the summit of Mount Varag to Van. I mean, these are crazy, like, architectural feats. These are insane. At its greatest extent, the kingdom of Vaspurakan comprised the lands between Lake Van and Lake Urmia, also known as Lake Kaputan. Gagik Arsuni's kingdom encompassed most of the historic provinces of Vaspurakan and Mok, and temporarily in the 910s controlled parts of provinces of Ayrarat, Taron, and Korçaik. Yeah. Now, it's obvious that there was a lot of commerce, if you really think about it, around the lake. This is just a lake. This isn't a sea. You're going to one end of the sea. It's just a lake.
Yeah.
So you're building a port in a lake. Think about that for a second. You're not building a port to in the Mediterranean or in
it's in a lake. I mean, but it's a large lake.
Think about, and we're going to kind of touch on that. Think about the population that surrounded the lake and the commerce that might have existed.
Well, think of it like this. If, you know, let's say the commerce that's happening, if you got to go around the lake to get to the other side, mm-hmm. to deliver whatever goods, you can go straight, right?
Sure, but there was commerce to support this.
Of course,
he wasn't just, I picked this spot to build this thing.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a purpose for it. So the purpose has to satisfy the need.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Man, I just want to do a special episode on this now.
It's kind of so crazy, man. Yeah. Thinking you're getting these crazy pictures of, like, I mean, it's a lake.
Oh, man, we got to build that time machine.
Imagine we go out, I mean, here for people that are local, we go out to like Lake Pyramid or Lake Piru or Lake Casitas, a little further north, and there's like a bustling population around it, and it's just trade right across the lake.
Yeah.
Right across the lake. Nobody else. This is it. This is almost like the center of civilization at some point, right? The amount of people. And we'll get to numbers of people in a second.
Now, the continuator of Thomas Arsuni noted that King Gagik Arsuni built greatly expanded the city of Vostan, which was the center of Vaspurakan's Rashtuni County and was 17 miles southwest of the capital city of Van, situated on the northern slopes of Mount Artos on the southern eastern shore of Lake Van. He goes on by saying Vostan had a very fertile climate with a breeze always blowing from the four directions. Here the king planted fruit trees and adorned the land with an abundance of beautiful vineyards. There are many springs around the city, which helps the people to satisfy many of their needs. That is why the king undertook the construction of palaces, chambers, and streets wonderfully and beautifully decorated, which I find hard to describe in plain words. The king also built a wall from the side of the sea with huge slabs, laying its foundations at an immense depth. On the wall, he built a spacious gallery with vaulted passages overlooking the sea, adorned with gold and vibrant colors.
Sounds a lot like ancient Greece.
Yeah, yeah. Man, I want to go back. I want to see this stuff.
Yeah, this world sucks. Take me back there.
Seriously. My God. I mean, my imagination is just like, oh. Now, the city of Vostan was made up of the port situated on the shores of Lake Van, a citadel overlooking the walled city. The suburbs that extended well beyond the city walls. The city of Vostan, and most notably its port, was built according to the ingenious plan of the Armenian master architect Manvel, told you he's involved, in such a way that it formed part on an architectural ensemble with the port and the palace of Akhtamar that was about 4 nautical miles from Vostan.
Huh. I mean, it sounds like a fully developed oasis almost.
Yeah. Thus, you know, Gagik Artsruni moved his seat of power from Van to Vostan and the adjoined island of Akhtamar, which some scholars have argued became his new capital. I mean, why wouldn't he?
This place sounds like... this place sounds awesome.
Amazing. Yeah. Beautiful. Wow.
Sounds awesome. Pictures. As a side note, it is noteworthy to mention that Vostan was mentioned in the cuneiform inscriptions of the kingdom in the kingdom of Ararat as an important center of King Rusa or Rusha the First. A number of scholars believe that the county of Rushtunik, which is broken down into Rush and Tun, as you can put together the name, that is to say the house of Rush or Rusha, also draws its etymology from the name Rusha that a number of Armenian kings of Ararat bore. That's not surprising, taking into consideration that the fact that many of the Armenian Naharar houses, including Vaspurakan Artsrunis, Rushtunis, and many other that were mentioned in the early Middle Ages, were noted as early as the 3rd and 2nd millennium BC, by the way, in the Akkadian and later Assyrian inscriptions as among the kings of the Nidi Confederation, who at times banded their houses together in order to resist military attacks by neighboring Akkad and later Assyria, the old common foe. Yeah. In fact, the rise of the kingdom of Ararat at the end of the 2nd millennium BC centered in and around Lake Van, as we've discussed plenty of times before, took place, among other things, as a result of the necessity to form a strong and powerful centralized Armenian state to resist these incursions. In their histories, the House of Artsruni traced their genealogy to Tork Anger, the son of Paskam, and the great-grandson of the Armenian patriarch Ike. So there's a lineage. Yeah, I mean, it goes that far back. Of course, it was. If you really think about it, based on all the stuff we've talked about, it's almost like the dawn of the Armenian civilization.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
surrounded by Van or the areas around Van.
Of course, I mean, going back to our first episode,
northern Mesopotamia. Yeah,
everything we've covered, it's always been around Van. Yeah. It's so interesting, you know. Yeah. Coming back to the period of Gagik Artsruni and his architectural undertakings, the anonymous continuator of Thomas Artsruni, who was also a contemporary of King Gagik, also glorified 2 more structures erected by the order of the Artsruni king on the island of Akhtamar, the royal palace and the cathedral of the Holy Cross. King Gagik ordered to first and foremost artificially expand the island by bringing the palace on the island shoreline large stone slabs. We talked about this. In order to understand the fullness of the perception of scale, the continuator described in detail how the island was turned into a impregnable fortress by the construction of a fortress wall erected on a man-made underwater ridge.
See, I'm telling you, this is like they build from underwater up.
Yeah,
not from land up, from underwater up.
Now, the continuator gives a general overview of the planning and arrangement of the city, emphasizing the personal participation of King Gagik in the construction project. The guy was hands-on.
Yeah.
The king himself, endowed with multiple talents, together with numerous artisans, took into his hands the architect's cord and outlined the foot of the mountain of the island of Akhtamar, the location where beautiful place was to be built, and also laid out the plan for the adjoining beautiful gardens, allocating hollows of gardens and flower beds.
This place sounds magical.
Yeah.
Really does.
I mean, you know,
he really wanted to make an impact with this beautiful, glorious palace again, and everything he was doing.
It's a flex, and I don't blame him. I'm not speaking in negative.
I don't think it was just a flex. I think in the beginning we mentioned that how him and Queen Tamar were very passionate about the church, very passionate about the arts, mm-hmm. and about the sciences. So you're seeing
he turned it into a cultural center
of those passions, kind of described here. Yep. So,
now switching over to some of our foes.
Yeah.
The Abbasid caliph.
Not the Abbasid.
Yeah. Caliph al-Muqtadir in 914 also recognized Gagik as the king of Armenia. Gagik's legitimacy received a further boost in 924 when the Armenian Catholicus and historian Hovhannes Trashkhanakertsi moved from the old Armenian capital city of Devin to Vaspurakan. And Devin was still in shambles at this point. Trashkhanakertsi, who was initially reserved and even critical of Gagik Artsuni, later heaped praise upon the Artsuni king, noting that Gagik, full of wisdom that was characteristic of him, was inclined towards benevolence, striving for unity and consent of all his neighbors and relatives, bringing them to friendship and allegiance to himself and his beloved brother Gurgen, all of whom he honored with dignity and respect. Mm-hmm. Gagik presented himself towards his foes with magnificent power and radiance that was second to none. Throughout his reign, King Gagik created a lot that the people were provided with: prosperity and peace, renewal and security, abundance and fertility, and people lived in their peaceful homes as if they were in a safe harbor. The kingdom of Vaspurakan was roughly made up of the territory of the Vaspurakan province of Greater Armenia, and within its boundaries included 10 large cities, including Van, Vostan, Arches, Perkri, Manaskert, and others, as well as around 4,000 large and small settlements, 72 castles, 115 monasteries, and more than 1 million inhabitants.
That is so insane.
So this just paints a picture of what was going on at this time period. This was a bustling metropolis.
I was just going to say that.
With trade, with commerce, with everything.
Yeah.
Everything built around Van.
Yeah.
In Vaspurakan. Yep. And for those of you who are not familiar with where Vaspurakan is, it's basically, it encompasses mostly the eastern side of Lake Van.
Yeah.
Mostly the eastern side.
Again, I just, like, he was just, you know what? I don't have time for this, back and forth. I see myself as the king. Like, almost like, I feel like he was almost, his own competitor. Like, he didn't care about.
Sure. But yeah.
He kind of went like, you know what? Bagratunis, whatever. I'm going to do what I'm going to do with my kid to show everybody of what I can create.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, they did have rule over Vaspurakan.
Of course. That was theirs. But it was just,
and
like,
he made that the center of everything.
And he was trying to make a point that, look what I'm doing here. I should be the king of Armenia.
A million people.
That's a lot million of people for that area. Yeah. Thus, Sambat the First, Bagratuni's son and successor, Ashot the Iron, for many years remained in the shadow of Gagik Artsuni and had to work diligently for many years in order to restore the Bagratuni dynasty standing throughout the kingdom, as well as securing international recognition for both the Byzantine Empire and the Caliphate. It is not surprising that Gagik Artsuni extended his domain after 914, incorporating a great deal of territory previously held by King Sambat I. However, Gagik's title as the King of Armenia was only in name, as he was not able to control most of Armenia, as the Bagratunis, as well as other feudal houses, held various provinces of Armenia under their control. Another important development took place after 919, keep trying to come back to the 20th century. In 919, when Gagik's relationship with Yusuf became strained, when the Emir of Atropatene clashed with Caliph al-Muqtadir.
Here we go.
The Abbasid Caliph demanded Gagik's help in his standoff against Yusuf, threatening the Arsuni king with retaliatory invasion if the latter refused.
Yeah.
Thus, Gagik became a somewhat unwilling ally of al-Muqtadir and the bitter enemy of Yusuf. Not surprisingly, Subuk, the emir who for a few years ruled Atropatene during the imprisonment of Yusuf by the caliph, pursued a reconciliatory line with Ashot the Iron, recognizing Ashot the Iron as the King of Kings of Armenia.
There's that title again.
That is to say, the supreme king of all of Armenia.
I feel like this is like some wicked WWF.
WWE.
Like, or, yeah, whatever it's called now. Like some sort of no holds barred ladder match thing.
Yeah, yeah. However, when around 927, Ashot the Iron began an active campaign of driving remnants of Atropatene troops from the borders of Armenia, Yusuf, who had earlier returned from his imprisonment and once again became the emir of his real, restoring to the time-tested tactics of divide and conquer.
Here we went again.
Through this so many times here last episode, began to once again support Gagik Atsuni against Ashot the Iron.
We don't like Yusuf.
Wow.
Don't like Yusuf.
Yeah. So,
however, Yusuf was killed.
Yes. About time. Finally.
He was killed in 928 while fighting against the Karmatians of Eastern Arabia, and Ashot the Iron was also around this time, was succeeded by his brother Abbas the First Bakraduni. In the early 930s, Gagik Artsuni sent a letter to the Byzantine Emperor Romanus Lekapenos asking for the support against the Emir of Atropatene. The 13th century Arab historian Ibn al-Atir wrote that around 931-932, the Byzantine armies began a campaign against the Caliphate and other Muslim states and were able to make gains due to the support of Gagik Artsuni, who had joined the armies of the legendary Byzantine Armenian general Gurgen Hovhannes and John Kurkuas. One by one, Armenian towns of Garin, Malatya, and others fell to the Byzantines. During this time, Gagik the First Artsuni allied himself with the Byzantines since he faced a renewed war with Sajid Emir Mufli, who had succeeded Yusuf after the latter's death in 928. Well, at least we got rid of Yusuf.
Yeah.
General Gurgen marched his army into Vaspurakan in order to aid Gagik I, who had rallied the local Armenian princes against Mufli. Gurgen's army also raided the Kaysait Emirate, which he had established itself on the northern shores of Lake Van, and leveled Klat and Berkri to the ground before marching into Mesopotamia and capturing the Armenian town of Shamshat once again. Gagik was unable to capitalize on this and captured Kaysat territory, as Mufli immediately launched a new offensive into Vaspurakan. Emir Said ibn Hamdan of the Hamdanid Emirate that ruled a territory in northern Syria and Iraq attacked the Byzantines and drove them back. Shamshat was again abandoned, and in November of 931, the Byzantine garrison withdrew from Malatya.
So many things happened here.
But like it seems like this has shifted more to the south.
Yeah.
Like we mentioned, northern Iraq and Syria, which
into the mic.
Basically, Mike. Am I too far away?
Yeah.
Is this better?
That's much better.
Is this better?
Yeah.
Okay. It's kind of shifted to a little bit more to the south, but again, it doesn't necessarily guarantee that everywhere else was peaceful, because this place was just a cluster. You know, mess.
Yeah, it was a mess. In 936, when Lashkari ibn Mardi, Gilit leader from the Atropatene, invaded Armenia, Gagik Artsuni came to the rescue of Abbas Bagratuni, who was forced to retreat from the Ararat province into Iberia. Gagik's army, at the decisive battle near Horvirap, defeated Lashkari and marched his army into Divin, which he was able to easily conquer. Gagik held the city of Devin until the early 940s. So he was there. He finally, you know. In 937, Gagik also defeated Dalamite forces of the Buyid dynasty, which during this time ruled much of Iran and invaded Vosbulakan from northern Iran.
Yeah.
Lashkari ibn Mardi, one of the rulers of Atropatene, who briefly ruled the area from 937 to 938, I mean, that's a year, in 938 launched a new invasion of Vosbulakan, but in a crucial battle was defeated by Gagik Arzuni's general Atom Anzevatsi and was killed on the battlefield. This was an important victory not only for Gagik Arzuni, but also the Abbas Bagratuni.
Yeah.
The 10th century Arab chronicle Ibn al-Qwaid noted that after 937, Atropatene no longer attacked Armenia as the situation had changed in favor of the Armenian side.
Bye-bye, Yusuf.
In fact, Daisam Ibn Ibrahim al-Kurdi, or simply...
Just call him Daisam.
Daisam, or just Daisam. Yeah, I don't know why we had to say all that.
Yeah, that's historically relevant, but...
Who was a Kurdish commander who ruled Atropatene between 938 and 955, adopted a friendly, even pro-Armenian policy, and as such was in allied terms with Gagik Arzuni.
Yeah. So see, Yusuf goes.
Yeah.
The virus.
I mean, Yusuf, you know,
the virus.
Kurds and Armenians historically have always tried to be peaceful neighbors, brothers, you know, until this day, I think there's a really interesting dynamic, right?
It is. It's an interesting dynamic. I mean, not to get into current modern day stuff, but they're not very fond of the Turks.
Yeah.
In recent decades.
Yeah.
For, you know, for various reasons, especially along the borders.
Yeah.
They're actually pushing to get their own country.
Yeah, we talked about that, right? Yeah. Was it with what were we talking about?
What episode was that when we were talking about the Kurds? Possibly.
Was it? Who were we talking? Oh no, it was with Hamlet when we were talking about the reality of getting Western Armenia back, and it's like talking about how many Kurds live there. How do you kind of?
I mean, it's all along the border.
Yeah, it's like, what are you gonna do? Like, there was some truth to it. By the way, that was an amazing episode with Hamlet, and we're gonna have him back on.
Yeah,
we're working on dates. Go listen to that. That was a really
full
good
of information.
Episode. Yeah. So
after Gagik Arzuni passing in 943, the throne of the kingdom of Vosbulakan passed to his son Derenik, who ruled from 943 to 959. However, Derenik was not able to assert himself as the preeminent king of Armenia, as was done by his father Gagik I, who without a doubt was not only the founder of the kingdom of Vosbulakan, but also its great ruler. King Derenik Arzuni remained both de jure and de facto the king of Vosbulakan and did not claim to be king of all of Armenia.
Wow.
And Iberia, sorry. Oddly enough. It's like, I'll just stay here. I like this. Well, yeah, your dad built a built heaven.
Seriously.
From what it sounds like. It's like, well, I don't need anything else. This is affirmed by the account of Catholicus Ananya I of Mok, who was the Catholicus of Armenia from 946 or 949 to about 968 AD. Ananya I referred to King Derenik Arzuni as the king of Vosbulakan, while in the same passage referred to King Abbas Bagratuni as the king of Armenia.
There you go.
So you see, we'll probably have a lot more information about this in the future. In 958, King Derenik of Vosbulakan, who died without a male heir and was succeeded by his younger brother Hamazasp, upon whose death in 969, the kingdom was divided among his three sons, Ashot, Gurgen, and Semekerim Hovanes. The eldest...
Third one.
Yeah.
Let's name him Senekerim.
I know, right? Hovanes. Like, just... Like, I know. The when,
poor kid.
I know. Yeah. She's like, Dad, couldn't I have gotten a normal name? No,
imagine the girls.
You're Senekerim Hovanes. Ashot Gurgen, come here. It's
like Ara Senekerim Hovanes.
Yeah, it sounds like
like cussing him out.
Yeah, like you're slapping him on the head.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, sorry to be disrespectful.
The eldest brother, Ashot, retained the royal title and the suzerainty over his younger brothers. After Ashot's death in 991, Gurgen took the throne, bypassing the former son. Sennacherib Hovhannes became the sixth and last king of Vaspurakan in the same manner in 1003 AD following Gurgen's death.
Finally.
Yes.
Kid got it.
Would have been a long tombstone.
Gurgen.
Respect to ancestors.
I'm just... Sorry.
All right. Now, in 1021, King Sennacherib Hovhannes ceded the kingdom of Vaspurakan to the expanding Byzantine Empire, which was eager to reassert its authority over all of Armenia. Thus, the kingdom of Vaspurakan, founded in 908 by Gagi Kartsruni, came to an end. King Sennacherib, from Emperor Basil II of the Armenian dynasty of the Byzantine Empire, in return received the territory of Sebastia in Lesser Armenia or Armenia Minor, and the territories extended to the Euphrates River, where the king passed away in 1025 or 1027.
It was that or be killed, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. King Sennacherib's body was taken back to the monastery of Varagavank on the slopes of Mount Varag, which was founded by the king and had also become a royal burial chamber for the Artsumi kings and queens. King Sennacherib's wife, Queen Hushush, that right?
Hushush.
Okay. Who was the daughter of King Gagik the First Bagratuni, was also laid to rest next to the king in the Varagavank burial chamber.
Yeah. But, seems like a pretty upscale site.
Yeah. Yeah. The monastery, even after the fall of the kingdom of Vaspurakan, retained its importance over the subsequent centuries, became one of the most important religious centers of the region.
Yeah, it seems like they turned this into a holy site of sorts, or a royal slash holy site.
I mean, I get it that they had to, the normal. Byzantine Empire took over, but, and again, the Byzantine Empire,
Basil II.
Basil II from Armenian origin.
Flexing that Armenian muscle.
Yeah.
So, the Byzantine Empire.
Well, he was also serving the Roman Empire.
Sure.
But still.
It must be noted that in the 11th century, annexation of the kingdom of Vaspurakan by the Byzantine Empire had a 10th century precedent. In 967, the Byzantine Empire had annexed the Bagraduni-held principality of Taron, had also offered the local Bagraduni princes Gregory and Ashot lands in Lesser Armenia. The Bagraduni branch of Taron, like so many of the Armenian aristocracy that made up the ruling elite of the empire, became the prominent house of Taronites.
Yeah.
In the 11th century, the Byzantine Empire, also in the year of 1001, annexed the Bagraduni-held principality of Tyche, followed by the annexation of the Bagraduni kingdom in 1045, and in 1065, the annexation of the kingdom of Kars. In exchange, the Byzantine emperors granted King Gagik II Bagraduni and King Gagik of Kars possession of lands in the Byzantine held in Lesser Armenia. We will delve more into the fall of the Bagraduni dynasty and discuss more in detail some of the events in subsequent episodes.
Yeah, we're going to definitely cover those.
Yeah, we'll also touch on Ashot Yerkat, prominent figure, and Melke or Tamar, and many other figures.
Yeah. Around 100,000 of Sennacherib's subjects moved with their king to Lesser Armenia, but most of Vaspurakan's Armenian population remained intact.
Yeah.
The territories of Lesser Armenia under Sennacherib's control continued to be governed by his son and successor, David Artsruni.
Yeah.
Vaspurakan became the Byzantine province of Asparagania, sometimes also referred as Basprakania. I don't know.
It sounds similar.
Basprakania. Okay. A Hellenized form of the name Vaspurakan, basically. That's what it is. In about 1050, the theme of Asparagania was merged with that of Taron, only to be conquered by the Seljuks few years later in 1054 through 1056.
Six.
Yeah. So,
you know, we're going to cover the King Gagik's wife, Mulke. Is that how we pronounce this?
Call her Tamar.
Tamar. Yeah. It's just easier, right?
Yeah. As Mulke well as is like, I think Mulke is like the English version of it.
I still couldn't pronounce her name properly. Yeah. Anyway, as well as the lives of other kings and queens of Armenia in our future episodes. So stay tuned. Thank you for listening to our podcast.
And watching. Yeah.
We appreciate all of your support and continued listen.
Might want to cut that last part out.
No, I'm not going to cut it out. No, no, you shouldn't have said that. No, it's fine. Don't worry. We're not going to cut it. It's fine. No,
whatever.
Okay. Well, everybody, we're not going to cut that out. And you dragged that on so long. It's funny. But anyways, well, this was interesting. You know,
it's the fallout to the story.
It was kind of like a on the same timeline also, but kind of going around to talk about Gagik Artuni.
Yeah.
But again, he was an important figure as much as he did, he did backstab Sambat.
He sounded like the bad figure,
yeah,
especially after the last episode, which is true.
He still was.
Yeah,
I mean, overall, in the concept of Greater Armenia, he was the reason why.
But he did. You know, there were some of the accomplishments of the kingdom of Vaspurakan and surrounding Van, as we talked about, was kind of showing the power of Armenia, right?
Yeah.
Yes, it was more or less supported by Yusuf. And some of his other, you know, Arabic cohorts, but still, like, it just goes to show you that how even in division didn't necessarily mean that there was one guy taking control of the whole situation with Armenia. There was still things being done.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, from the last episode, even at the end, he did come to his senses.
Yeah, he realized seemed that, like, he had some regrets.
Yeah, regrets, and he did help later on,
to an extent.
He did. He came to the aid of, you know, the Bagratunis.
Yes.
But you know, he did his part in Armenian history, so that's why we wanted to talk about this.
He's too important of a figure with what he's done.
Yeah. So. That was it as far as this episode. Now, next Thursday, we will be live, which is November 10th at 8 p.m. on YouTube and Facebook. Mm-hmm. Our guest will be the famous Canadian Armenian photographer, Hadid Bayz Kacharyan, a.k.a. Hawk. We've been trying to get him on for a while now.
Yeah.
Actually, we started the podcast. Finally, he's going to be in town. So he is published more than 15 trilingual books, albums about Armenia, Artsakh, and Western Armenia since the 90s, including Artsakh Photographic Journey, Yedgir, Armenian Ornament, One Nation, One Church, Armenian Ornamental Art, Cross Stones, Armenia, A Paradise Country, and many more. Mm-hmm. Hadid is the photographer who was the first one who hovered in the Armenian skies and basically photographed the country for the first time, finding and excavating unseen images of our homeland from the distance of a helicopter.
Really?
Yeah. And what we're going to do, we'll be talking, he's here actually doing a lecture. And we'll be talking about the lost treasures of Artsakh, Julfa Khachkars, and he's going to share photos that he took of these great treasures.
Awesome.
That pretty much exist till today.
Excellent.
So he will be our guest. Again, that will be Thursday, November 10th, 8 p.m., live on YouTube and Facebook. So, you know, hit that subscriber button, hit that notification bell, hit that like button, please. That helps us. And as we mentioned, now we have the option for becoming a member with our channel. So if you're interested, click on it. You'll learn all the benefits. and become part of our community and help us grow. So
please.
Anything else, Mr. No. Balian?
No, I had to show my pouty face really quick.
Okay. All right. Well, as we always say at the end of the show, respect one another, love one another, and till the next episode.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
Take care of yourselves.